Hello, Bulldogs. Thank you for tuning in to Who's Behind the Bulldog, Arvada High School's community interview podcast series. I'm your host and one of the assistant principals at Arvada, Jeremy Jensen. Each week, I'll sit down with someone from our Arvada community, be it staff, students, families, or other community members, to hear their stories. We'll discuss their histories, successes, challenges, learnings, future hopes and dreams, and much more. I hope you find some connections in their stories and hopefully are inspired to take some time to get to know them a bit better as our school year progresses. We have an amazing community here at Arvada, and I hope we can continue to strengthen that despite the challenges that await us in these unknown times.
Today's guest is Annalie De Lacerda. Annalie is a world languages teacher at Arvada High School. This year, she will be teaching two sections of French 1 and three sections of Spanish 1. In our interview, Annalie discusses many engagement tips that she has learned over her 18 years of world languages teaching experience in the El Paso and Denver metro areas. She talks about how she has built relationships with students through becoming a warm demander and demonstrating her passion for appreciation of culture. She also speaks about learning to implement project-based learning into her classes this year for the first time, and how this new approach has led to strong engagement from her students. Finally, she talks about some great reflections and tips about engaging students remotely. Thanks again for tuning in and enjoy our conversation.
Annalie De Lacerda, hello, how are you?
Good, I'm doing well today.
Thank you so much for having me over.
Yes, it's a pleasure to have you here.
I'm looking forward to getting to know you a little bit. There's, like I said, in text messaging, it's was a little bit of a whirlwind last year, and I've always really enjoyed your company and always wanted to get to know you a little bit more, and I'm excited to have the opportunity to do so right now.
Yeah, well, I'm very honored to be part of this, and just kind of like you said, I think last year was a whirlwind for myself as well, and so I don't feel like I got to make too many connections, so I'm happy to do this.
Yeah, excellent. So tell me a little bit about yourself and what brought you into education.
It's kind of like that old cliche, you know, I was in high school and I was taking classes and I took French because I didn't want to take Spanish. Everybody took Spanish, and, you know, my family speaks Spanish, and I grew up hearing it but never really speaking it so I could understand it, but I like absolutely refused to speak it. So when I went into high school, I was like, no, I'm taking French. And I had a really great French teacher, Madame Miller, and that just kind of is what started my love for French and languages in general. And so I took 3 years of French in high school, and then, you know, came up and decided that that was going to be my major at the university. And that's when I finally figured out like how valuable Spanish was. And so Spanish was my minor. And did a study abroad for a semester. And then I just, you know, decided that teaching was going to be what I was going to do because I really enjoy it. And I love the culture and I love talking about different cultures and kind of bringing that out. So yeah, that's where it all started.
Where was your study abroad?
I spent an entire summer in Montreal in Canada. And that was like my junior going into my senior year of college. And it was really funny because my college professors, when I came back, they were just horrified. All of my French college professors, they were like, oh my gosh, you're speaking Canadian, and they eat their words, and you're not speaking proper French. And it was really funny. And it's something that you don't really notice until you're in a different area that maybe it has a different dialect. So kind of like if you go to the South here, you know, and they have a different way of talking, or Louisiana, or even back East, it's like, you know, all of these places have these different dialects. And it's not something that I realized until I had that experience and came back. So yeah, I got to spend a summer. I stayed with a family, a French family, and just had a wonderful time.
That's fantastic. And yeah. I totally see that, like going over, I lived in England for a while, and British, it has such different dialects just across the railroad tracks. Like it's like one street they speak in one way, and the next it's a little different. You know, there's some similarities. Like, one of the big reasons that I got into education myself was because of my French teacher in high school.
Oh, wow.
She was the best teacher I ever had. I took 2 years of, 3 years of Spanish first, and didn't learn very much during those 3 years. But when I got into the my French class, she was like completely like immersive and would not allow any English. If we did speak any English, she would like kiss us on top of the head and just embarrass us in front of the entire
That's
school, fire
fantastic.
class, entire class. I don't think she could get away with that now.
Mm-mm.
But did you take anything away from Madame Miller, you said, or Muller?
From Miss Miller, I think it was just the love of the culture. She was French, and it was just, the way that she always brought culture in to our class was probably the biggest takeaway, was just that love and that passion for it. And that's something that I think we kind of go through ups and downs with in our career. I mean, I've been teaching for 19 years now, and I can definitely see where there were some times where maybe I wasn't as passionate about my profession as I am or I try to be. And so, yeah, I think I always kind of go back to that, the fact that there's just a love and a passion and just something that you really want to share and hopefully people appreciate and kind of opens up their viewpoints to different ways of life and different views, how different people see different things.
That passion is such a key thing for students, right? Like, it could be any variety of topics, but if somebody presents like an excitement and a passion about it, like you can kind of spark things that otherwise they may have no interest in, especially if it's being delivered from someone that doesn't have that passion behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think that's one of the things. I hadn't taught Spanish since my first year teaching. So I was really apprehensive about that because it was not the best experience. Obviously, I was in a border town and, kind of like myself growing up, I didn't really appreciate it. Most people did not appreciate Spanish. They just think it's just something that they got to take and get on with. And so there was a real big difference that I had seen between the motivation in my French students and my Spanish students. So I was a little apprehensive this year about teaching Spanish, but they ended up being some of my favorite classes. Like they, even though they really struggled, my French classes had just this different dynamic where they had the interest already there, but with my Spanish classes, it's like there was no interest, and we built this interest. And so, midway through the school year, I mean, I had some students that were just like, "Oh God, I hate Spanish," and they're like, "But you know what? Because you're teaching it, I'm gonna try. Like, I'm gonna try just because of you." And that to me was probably like one of the biggest takeaways for me from this last year was just it was so nice to them for them to semi embrace Spanish and move on. And of course, my French students, just them taking away the things that they needed to take away for, hopefully to go on to French too eventually.
Emily, what brought you to Arvada specifically?
2015, I decided to move. My ex was moving up here, and so we decided co-parenting was more important to us than our children, having to travel extensively just to continue to have that connection. And so he found a job in Colorado Springs. I found a job over in Adams 14. And so we moved up here, and I've always wanted to live outside of El Paso, outside of Texas, get away from the heat, and this has been perfect. It really has. And so I spent 4 years at Adams City High School, and then I decided it was time to make a change because it was just too toxic of a situation, and I ended up at Arvada.
Great. We're thrilled to have you.
Yeah.
So glad to see your st our students that may have had apprehension about the Spanish and about language before to sort of like get inspired by you and your personality to sort of embrace that.
Yeah, it's been a learning curve, but it's been great.
Yeah. What do you say are some things in particular that you think that they might connect with? Like, why? What is it about? What changes about them to make them say, like, because of you, Miss De La Cerda, I want to try harder? Do you have any specific things that you can think of in mind that, like, I can name these things.
I'm not sure that I can name them. I think it's really just kind of the way that I conduct my class. I try to immerse them. So kind of like your previous teachers, I try to immerse them in the language. It was a bit of a learning curve this last year because I was also learning how to do, and I'm still learning how to do this problem-based and project-based learning. And so it's a completely different way of teaching. But it's also very useful because I think that it's something that just comes naturally with learning a language. So in my classroom, I'm always trying to do things where they're reading, writing, and speaking. Obviously, speaking being the emphasis because that's the only bank of time that I get with them that they can listen, speak, and try and interpret a language, unless they're doing it on their own. And some of them did. And so for me, it's always been hands-on. I'm not the type of teacher that you're going to see sitting behind a desk very often. I'm constantly moving around the room. So whether they're doing a written exercise or a speaking exercise, I'm going through and I'm listening, and there's a lot of pair work and there's a lot of, some like individual group attention. And so I think it's just that idea that they realize very quickly that they're not going to get away with just sitting in the back of the room and not being able to engage. Like there's going to be some sort of engagement. And it's just that whole thing. It's just we're going to engage from day one, and we're going to interact, and we're going to talk. And yeah, you guys are going to struggle, but I'm going to help you. I'm going to help get you through it. And so I think they take that away very quickly. And so they start to realize that the more I resist, the harder it's going to be, right? And then when they start finally do clicking, like, things start do making, they start making those connections to their main language, their mother tongue. I think that's when that kind of effective filter comes down, and then that's when they really start to be like, okay, well, I can get through this, and I'm going to actually do this. But I think it takes a lot of community building. I think it takes a lot of engagement. It takes that interaction, right? Where it's not just me standing in front of the room. We're all working together to learn this language.
That's not always the easiest thing to jump into, especially for students who are not used to that, or they want something more passive and to kind of like hide in the back and not say too much.
Yeah, it is. But again, it's one of those things where you have to practice a language in order to learn it. And so it's just one of those things that I've always done. And so, even if they're very apprehensive about getting up in front of a class, right, and practicing or doing a conversation or something, it's something that they can do with me. And that's part of the other reason why I go around and I work with different smaller groups or individually, is because I know that there's those students that's really tough for them to, say something, let alone try and say it in another language. And so it's building that confidence, it's building that understanding, and getting the ear for the way that everything is pronounced so that they feel more confident when they do say something.
That's awesome. What are you most proud of from your time so far at Arvada?
I'm really proud of the fact that I made it through the first year. It, like I said, it was a whirlwind having to change districts, and coming from a place that was just so toxic. It was almost kind of like shell shock to go there, and really to be able to see how things work. It's just it that was really nice to see, is the level of support that I feel like we have at Arvada, the different programs that we have in place, the supports that we have in place for teachers, for students. It's like that's the way that it should be. And so that was really beneficial to me. And so my biggest takeaway was also, just the fact that it's a learning curve after, teaching 17, 18 years a certain way, and now I'm being asked to, do this project and problem-based learning. That was a really big learning curve for me. So I'm really proud of the way that a couple of our projects came out. My Spanish ones, I think really the Día de los Muertos, where they had to do the Day of the Dead altars, they really knocked it out of the park on that. And even though they were very apprehensive about it, I think that they took away a lot of that stuff. And then when we watched some of Coco, they were like, oh, this is what it means. So it's like they made these connections. But then we also had some really deep conversations in several of my classes about, cultural appropriation versus cultural appreciation. And that was kind of the culminating end of that project was, okay, what's cultural appreciation? What's cultural appropriation? So is this movie Coco, which one would we categorize it as and why? Just in the small group and our whole group discussions, that was a huge takeaway for me.
It's such a good movie. I'm curious, what did they take away from that? Did they, what was their sort of like answer to that question then?
I think it depends on the class that we were in. I think most of them felt that it was leaning towards cultural appreciation, but I did find several articles that I provided them, and then they found a few articles as well of people that were talking about some of the misrepresentations in Coco that was still promoting some of the stereotypes. And so we talked about that. We talked about the stereotypes. We talked about now that they had this understanding of what some of these symbols were, especially on the Day of the Dead altars and that. And then when we connected it to the movie, they were like, okay, we get it now. Like, we understand what this means or why this was represented this way or whatever. And so it was really interesting. It wasn't 100% one way or the other, but it was definitely a valuable conversation that we had.
That subject and that topic, I think, over time has like really been evolving. It's one of those things right now where when you are talking about a variety of different cultures, like it's kind of hard to like think back at in your past. Like I had to take some hard learn some hard lessons, I think, by looking back and like, wow, that was definitely appropriation at the time, and I'm trying to get better at learning to become more, appreciative. And do you have any suggestions or advice, I guess, out there on those lines of like, what do you do and say or talk? How do you talk with your students about, going down the right path with that?
I think that leads into this whole idea that we have this kind of movement that we're going through with being more culturally responsive. And, obviously being a world language teacher, I think that that's huge because that's what we've been trying to do ever since we've had classes, right? Is that it's not just about learning a language, it's about learning the culture behind people. Behind that group of people. And so for me, I feel like it's a really good opportunity to bring this to the forefront. So, you're not just learning this language, you're learning about the culture and the traditions behind people, and you're learning to appreciate it. And the fact of the matter is I think that, one of the things that we talked about in both my French and Spanish classes was the fact that there's stereotypes, right? When people think of the French, the first thing that they think of are baguettes. Or the beret and so we've talked about how some of those things can be misconstrued and can be demeaning, and we've talked about how we need to just better appreciate some of these things and not really try and we recognize that they're stereotypes, but we don't necessarily have to feed that line of understanding. Like, we can have a better view about it. We can have a more open discussion about that. And so for me, it's really been about learning how to recognize, but then also understand that, pigeonholing people is not the way to go. It really is about appreciating the person individually and understanding where they come from.
Having these levels of discussion, especially with our students, I'm sure really heightens the engagement, that intellectual stimulation, like the challenging their thinking. Do you have any other strategies or things that you do in order to heighten that engagement and keep students like really interested in the content and learning a language and culture?
I think it just goes back to the things that I've always done, which is trying to engage them in the target language. Obviously, I'm always trying to find. They complain a lot about me playing music in the classroom because it's either in French or Spanish. And they're just like, oh, there's this and that. But, ultimately, it always gets around to, well, is there French rap? Is there Spanish? Obviously they know there's Spanish rap. Trap music is a big thing right now, and I'm all like, "Yep, you will find that in this." And so I'll play some of it for them. And so I think it's just bringing in some of those different cultural items to help keep them engaged. Also, like social media, they a lot of the times don't realize that, yeah, there's Twitter in French, there's Twitter in Spanish, there's, Instagram, there's all these different ways that they can actually access the material. And so I'll try and bring in little snippets of those just to try and catch their attention, hook it, and then we build on that. So always just trying to connect to things that are in their wheelhouse and helping them to see that, similar things are happening in other cultures and languages.
I had not thought about that because I remember when I was in French and Spanish, like we would try to do like some written communication with like pen
Pen
pals, if you
pals.
will.
Yep.
But now in today's day and age, this is like instantaneous. Like you could connect with people all over the world like right away and respond to them. Have you done much with like the social media side of things at all, or?
I haven't really pushed them into being on social media in the target language. We kind of do things in class. So like one assignment might be create a Twitter post about this. And so I'm looking to see that they can use the gist pieces of vocabulary and language that we're doing. Not necessarily something that they're going to post out in the real world. But it's really interesting because inevitably, especially gamers, I always have kids come back like, "Oh, I've been gaming with this person from Canada and they speak French, and so they're like teaching me these things, and what does this mean?" And sometimes I'm like shaking my head going, "Oh God. Oh no, this is not what we want to say." And they're like, "Oh, well, they told me to come and tell you." And I'm like, "Oh dear."
They're learning something.
Exactly. They're learning something, but it's also great because they're finding a different way of engaging. And so I'm like, you're going to pick up way more slang that way. I never learned slang, and so it's not something that I necessarily teach. But I also don't want to, I don't want them to not engage. And so I always welcome it. But I do kind of like, some of those things you kind of don't want to say around other people. And so yeah, it's been fun. It's been fun. But yeah, especially when they come back and they themselves have made a connection to somebody else, outside of our school, it's always interesting.
It is. I remember like traveling and finally using French, when I was in France for the first time way back when. I never went to Canada, but I went to France and spent a little time there. And like the first time that I, started to actually converse with somebody that wasn't in this classroom with my French teacher was like, wow, like this is like empowering in a way, like I can now talk to other people. And of course, like it was terrible and really broken, and the French people aren't super tolerant about people who are trying to speak. They'd prefer, I think, they spoke English. But
here's a fun fact about me. On one relatively recent trip to France, after many years of not using this language, I found myself in dire need of using a restroom while grocery shopping. I approached one of the store clerks, intending to ask them where the restroom was, où est les toilettes. Instead, I said, tu es les toilettes, which translates to, you are the restroom.
But that's great to make those connections and for the kids to see like there's value in this, right?
Yeah, and I try and do that all the time because when you come to learning a language, it's always confidence is always the last thing to come about. And so I tell them about my own experiences. I absolutely still get nervous talking to a native French speaker, talking to a native Spanish speaker, because then I get in my head and I'm like, oh, well, did I say that right? Well, no. And I explain that to them. I mean, my experience going to France was, I was talking to a salesperson one day and they're like, wow, you speak really good French. And I was like, well, I teach French. And they're like, oh, wow, if you would spend 6 months here, your French would be perfect. And so it's things like that that I think that makes it more accessible and human and makes them realize that it's not all about you don't have to be perfect because most people, for the most part, including the French, will appreciate the fact that you're at least trying to talk to them in their target language.
It is remarkable, though, that such a short amount of time when you are immersed in it and like you're sort of like forced to start to like think in that sort of language and how that really heightens and like just puts on the accelerator in a really big way for you to like pick up more and more and more and more.
Absolutely. And I tell my students all the time, if you can listen to it, if you can, watch it, whatever you can do is always going to help you 100%.
We've spoken a little bit already about equity and some terms around it, I guess. You mentioned culturally responsive teaching. What do you feel like an equitable education looks like for our students at Arvada?
I think there has to be flexibility in education, and I think that's the big thing that I've seen evolve in my years teaching is the fact that it's not a one size fits all approach. And so when I think of equity, I think of taking that and individualizing it. So you really have to build that community and learn about your individual students and what one student may need, another may not. And so it all goes back to really understanding where your students are coming from and really learning about them. And for me, it links back to some of the work that we did on being a warm demander. We've got these high expectations and it's about building these students up to get them to that point. But the only way you're going to build them up is if you know where they're at and meet them where they're at and then help scaffold and give them the skills that they need to get there. So for me, when I think of equity, I think of that. It's not that one size fits all approach. And some people are going to need more help than others. Some people are going to need things in a different way than others. And that's why I always try and create assignments where there's flexibility. So, if I've got somebody who is a strong writer, maybe they do, write something, whereas maybe somebody else who is more visual can create something. Or, say something. There's always those different modalities that can come in. And I think when you allow that flexibility, you also get pleasantly surprised by some of the creations that our students create because it's amazing some of the things they come up with.
They love that voice to be able to say, like, hey, I want to try this and get better at this. And I think that having that balance and, like, yes, kind of exposing them and giving them a choice to, like, go with what's really they're comfortable with and they want to be creative with and they can just really showcase their talents there, while also sometimes pushing them to, be exposed to something that might be outside of their comfort zone because it may be a current weakness, but it could be something that could benefit them later by knowing more about. You mentioned warm demander, and I'm really glad you brought that up. We haven't talked about this on this podcast yet, but for people maybe that weren't at the school last year or haven't been exposed to that term, warm demander, can you kind of like explain more about what that means, both in general and sort of like for yourself too?
I'm not sure that I can explain what it is. I can give you my understanding of it. My understanding of it is that we have high expectations, and so we're still holding the bar high. But it's the way that we go about scaffolding and the way that we go about creating a community with our students where we value and we appreciate them. And so it's about creating those individual relationships with them and really talking with them when we see things that maybe aren't going well. And so it's about having those conversations and, hey, I see that you're off today. Is everything okay? Is there something that you want to, talk about, or maybe they need a break? Things like that. So it's bringing in that accountability piece, but not in an authoritarian way, in a very approachable way. And it's having that two-way communication, allowing students the ability to really communicate and collaborate with us. To me, in my mind, it's creating an environment of collaboration, and letting them know, hey, we're in this together. This is where we need to get to. This is where you're at, and this is what it's going to take to get there. And I'm here to help you.
I think that's really well said.
Thank you.
Right, it's finding that balance between showing your human side and showing that you care, and that the warmth, that's the warm part of it, and then the demander side of like maintaining the high expectations, expecting the rigor, like asking the students to do the heavy lifting of the critical thinking in those in within your walls and not doing things for them, right? Yeah, that's great. I want to ask a little bit about the remote learning, the COVID situation, in reflection, I guess, from the springtime, and then thinking moving forward, things that you've learned from a remote time there, anything you're planning on doing, or things that actually may have worked that you've noticed from our time so far remote.
I think in the springtime, a lot of it was just about getting through, and our students realized very quickly that it was not as great as they thought it was going to be to stay home. And so the engagement initially started out really well, and then it just kind of dropped. And I think for me, the big takeaway for me was really when I reached out to students individually, it was almost kind of like bringing them back and getting them to be a little bit more engaged. And so I think for me, my big takeaway from that was the fact that we definitely need to have individual or small group communications in addition to these live synchronous sessions, because they're kids, and they're gonna take what they can. And so I think having it's about creating again those high expectations in a remote environment. So we still need to get here, but this is how we're going to get here, and it's definitely going to have to be a lot more individual one-on-one and synchronous sessions in order to get them there. That's kind of the thing that I saw the most lacking. And so I had the best experiences were when I was reaching out to those kids and making them get on Zoom with me, so like I got to see your face, or at least know that you're there. And so that was the most helpful.
What's something that you have as a goal, do you think, for yourself this year?
Definitely improving on the problem-based and the project-based learning. I think I've got a good handle on it. But it's definitely something that I need to improve on, and having a little bit more time, which I think I'll be able to do it with the hybrid or the remote. Having more like verbal interaction with the students, but definitely, especially at the beginning, creating just that those individual connections, but definitely improving upon the problem in the project-based learning, the PBLs. That's my big goal.
Great. I look forward to seeing your ideas and the projects that you guys do. And, PBL is a passion of mine. I've worked at a couple of PBL schools before. So if you ever wanted to connect with me, I'd be happy to, brainstorm things and ideas and suggestions of how we can, enhance various pieces of it. So that's awesome.
Yeah, that would be great.
I do ask this question to everybody about your best failure. What's been your best failure?
I think my best failure is recognizing my limitations and allowing myself to fail in front of students so that they see the human side. Too many times, I think we as teachers feel like we need to be perfect and we have to have all of the answers and stuff like that. And I think there's a humanity about it when you allow yourself, like you kind of said earlier, to be vulnerable and just to be a person in front of the students. And so for me, it's always been the fact that, kids need to see that we make mistakes too, and that we don't know everything. It's perfectly okay to say, I don't know the answer to that, and to help them find the answers.
Absolutely. Annalie, do you have any big advice for people? If you were to sort of look at somebody maybe that was thinking about going into teaching foreign language, for example, somebody just like really fresh, what would you say to that person, as big advice?
I think my big takeaways, my big things, is number one, lead with your heart. I learned a long time ago in the first years of teaching. I had a wonderful counselor, coworker who just pulled me aside and was just like, when it comes down to the kids, always err on the side of the students because we never really know what's going on in the background. And so I think you've got to have that flexibility. This is not a profession where we are working with inanimate objects. This is a profession where you're working with people. And so I think when you lead with your heart and you have that open communication and you're assuming best interests, if you do make a mistake, it's more because of you cared and not because you're trying to stigmatize somebody or punish them or whatever. And the other thing is just being flexible. I think that in all of my years teaching, it's always more difficult when we resist change. And so I think having that flexibility and being willing to learn and grow is probably one of the biggest, one of the other biggest takeaways that I would say.
Great advice. Emily, we, our students at Arvada are so lucky to have you as one of their teachers, one of their facilitators. I'm so glad that you prioritize, all of these things about addressing their needs, their humanity, engaging them with exciting things, challenging them with critical thinking. So it has been a pleasure talking with you today, and I really look forward to a new year, a new start here.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate you taking the time and being able to be interviewed. And I as well look forward to this year, this school year. I think we'll have a good year.
Me too.
Yeah.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you all for tuning in to today's podcast. I want to encourage you to take a minute to reach out to today's guest and make a personal connection. Until next time, this has been Jeremy Jensen with Who's Behind the Bulldog?